Hello and welcome to IASB Update. The IASB met in public from the 21st to the 24th of May 2013 in London. This podcast provides a brief summary of events. Before we begin, I'd just like to issue a brief health warning. Views expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect those of the IASB. I'm joined here today by Stephen Cooper, who's a member of the IASB, and Susan Lloyd, who's a senior technical director of the IASB. Stephen, would you like to start? I think we're going to talk about comprehensive review of the IFRS for SMEs.
Yeah, thanks. The board continued its review of the SME document. The last couple of meetings, the board has been discussing this. And in this meeting, we continued our consideration of whether to incorporate recently amended or recently issued IFRSs with suitable adjustments where appropriate into the IFRS for SMEs. And the board decided at this meeting that it would consider changes which we made to IAS 1 in 2011 regarding presentation of comprehensive income, that it would consider a change we made to IAS 32 regarding classification of rights issues, that it would take into account IFRIC 19 relating to the extinguishing of financial liabilities with equine instruments, and also two amendments to IFRS 1, first-time adoption, dealing with severe hyperinflation and government loans. So all of those would be incorporated into the IFRS for SMEs, obviously with suitable modifications to take into account the nature of that document. There are also several annual improvements which will be considered for incorporation as well. I won't list them. There's, I think, six of these. And then also we discussed various other potential amendments that had been raised as a result of the consultation that we did. We did ask a couple of questions in that consultation, asking respondents to raise their own issues, dealing with sort of specific requests as to what they would like to see changed within IFRS for SMEs. And the board discussed many of those and made decisions to add or incorporate additional things. That there's a good dozen of these things that we went through. Maybe you just pick on one or two just to give a flavour of the sort of things that we discussed. One of them was to incorporate guidance to help SMEs to apply the undue cost or effort exemption. There have been a number of questions in the past about exactly what that means. We also decided to add an undue cost or effort exemption to the requirement to recognise intangible assets separately in a business combination. There's been some comment that perhaps that's an area where we could make an improvement to the SME document, and the board took that on board and said yes, that we think there is a case to be made for that, so therefore we'll incorporate that within the proposals. So that essentially is it in terms of the various issues that we discussed, and as I said, there's quite a lengthy list of the individual items that we've decided to incorporate.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Sue, IFRS 3 business combinations is next on the agenda. Would you care to take us through events?
Sure. This is a sort of narrow scope issue that had been looked at by the Interpretations Committee, who have now referred it to the board for their consideration. And it's to do with the accounting where an entity acquires a controlling interest in another entity, and legislation or regulations require that acquiring entity to offer to purchase the remaining non-controlling interest in the entity, and whether or not a liability should be recognised for that obligation to purchase the non-controlling interests, and whether or not the original acquisition transaction and the mandatory purchase of the non-controlling interest should be considered a single transaction. Now, the committee had recommended that the board make a change to IFRS to say that the two transactions would be linked, and had asked the board to consider whether or not they thought a liability should be recognised for the obligation to purchase the non-controlling interests. Essentially, the board discussed it and decided that because they've already asked the staff to have a look at the accounting for puts over non-controlling interests and puts over own equity, actually, more broadly later in the year, that they not consider this issue now, but rather they ask the staff to have a look at all of those issues as one bigger issue later in the year. So they sent the staff away to think about it, and we'll bring some analysis back to deal with those two issues later in the year rather than issuing something separate now.
Okay, thanks very much. Moving on, and staying with Sue, IAS 39, financial instruments.
A particular issue here, again, another narrow scope project, and this is dealing with the accounting where a hedging derivative is required to be novated to a central clearing party. And the board issued a narrow scope exposure draft earlier this year with a 30-day comment period to deal with this urgent issue. And that exposure draft had proposed that a change be made to both IAS 39 and to IFRS 9 to confirm that if there is a novation to a central clearing party as a result of legislation, that hedge accounting be allowed to continue. And so the board discussed the feedback from that exposure draft at last week's meeting and confirmed that they would proceed to amend both IAS 39 and IFRS 9 to deal with this issue. And the board responded to the feedback it received and decided to do something slightly broader in scope than what was in the original exposure draft. So in particular, a novation need not be directly to a central clearing party. It can be to another entity that's included in the transaction, such as a clearing member of a central clearing party. And also, the board agreed that it doesn't have to be a mandatory novation. It could also be a novation that an entity voluntarily decides to undertake as a result of a change in legislation. So it's broadened the scope slightly. Also, the staff asked the board for permission to ballot and to move forward on this project. And the board agreed to give the staff permission to ballot. Nobody indicated that they're going to dissent. And so now we're moving on to the drafting of this document. And we hope to publish these amendments relatively quickly because it's an urgent issue. So we expect the amendment to 39 to be issued probably during June.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you very much. And the work on the conceptual framework continues, Stephen. There was a presentation to the board there.
Yeah, moving on from narrow scope changes to a rather large comprehensive project. Yeah, the board continued its discussions on the conceptual framework project. Actually, we didn't discuss a great deal at this meeting because essentially it was to decide on the comment period and give the staff permission to draft the discussion paper. So we decided that the comment period should be 180 days, 6 months. That will take the comment period probably to sometime in January, because the target is for us to publish the discussion paper on the conceptual framework in July. Work on it actually is already relatively advanced. The first staff draft of that is already written, so we're in the process of going through our sort of process of review internally. It's also been sent to ASAF members, who ASAF is acting as the advisory group for this project, for their consideration as well. So we're well on the road towards getting that document published. As I say, the target is sometime in July.
Okay, thank you very much. Same with Steve. Accounting for macro hedging is another item.
Yeah, this is another difficult project. I'm sure everybody's aware that the board has been discussing this separately from the general IFRS 9 project. IFRS 9 includes the general hedging. The accounting for macro hedging we've discussed over many months, working towards a discussion paper to be issued sometime later this year. The staff brought two issues to the board for consideration. The board didn't make any definitive decisions on this, but these are issues that will be incorporated in the discussion paper for us to obtain feedback on. The first was about presentation. Exactly how the revaluation approach that we're discussing for macro hedging should be incorporated into the income statement and the balance sheet. In the income statement, we discussed two different approaches: a stable net interest income approach and then an actual net interest income approach, both of which would then have beneath them changes in the value of the exposure and the derivatives, but presented in a slightly different way. The board did express some preference for the actual net interest income approach. They felt that presentation of interest income and then the resulting revaluation items underneath would provide the most relevant information. But we will be asking questions in the discussion paper on both of those. The statement of financial position was perhaps less clear. There were three different alternatives for that: line by line gross up, separate lines for the aggregate gross adjustments to assets and liabilities, so one line item in the assets section, one line item in the liabilities section, and then those two items netted off into a single net line item. And the board discussed those alternatives. I don't think we had a strong preference for one or the other. But again, those different approaches would be presented then as in the discussion paper. Perhaps the most challenging part of this, though, was the other issue that we discussed, which is the whole scope of accounting for macro hedging. And this is, we're applying a portfolio revaluation approach, revaluing the open risk position and then revaluing the derivatives. Well, the derivatives are accounted for in the normal way, with them being at fair value, with fair value changes included in profit and loss. So the question is, what do we apply the revaluation approach to? What, in terms of the risk position? Is it the whole portfolio? Is it some subsets of that portfolio? Is it just the part of the portfolio that is hedged? And it's not clear what the best approach is. I think the staff described a holistic view where one would look at the whole portfolio irrespective of whether the whole exposure has been risk managed, because that would then give information about both the part that is hedged and the part that isn't hedged. And many users have told us that the most important bit of information in this area is not so much what has been hedged, but it is the bit that hasn't. So the board is very conscious that holistic approach might give useful information. But at the same time, a holistic view would also involve increased volatility because of the revaluation adjustments. And then the question is how best to present that volatility. So the board had a good discussion on this. We didn't reach any firm conclusions about what the scope should be. And again, the discussion paper will highlight that as one of the key issues that has to be considered as part of finalising a macro hedging model.
Thanks very much, Steve. Moving on, our final two items. Firstly, revenue recognition. Sue?
Thanks. Yes, on revenue recognition, at the moment the staff are in the process of drafting the final IFRS, introducing the new revenue model. And so really what we discussed at the meeting last week was a few issues that are coming up during the drafting, some clarifications to examples to deal with credit card reward programs. But the main issue that was discussed at the board was really confirming that the board agreed with the staff that all of the necessary due process steps have been completed to enable us to move to a final IFRS, and that there's no need to re-expose the document. And the board agreed that we were ready to move to finalising the IFRS. And so the staff asked for permission to ballot and asked whether any board members are planning to dissent on the final revenue standard, and none of the ISB members are planning to dissent on the revenue standard, which is good news. So we're in drafting mode, as I said now, so hopefully the revenue recognition discussions are now complete, subject to any sweep issues that come up during the drafting process.
Great. And our final item of the financial instruments, classification and measurement.
Okay. Last but not least, classification and measurement come back to the board again after the close of the comment period on the exposure draft of limited amendments to IFRS 9. So at this meeting, the ISB staff presented the feedback that we received on the ISB's exposure draft at a joint meeting, because it is a joint project. So they summarise the feedback we've received on the comment letters, and at the June meeting we expect that the FASB will provide, at again a joint meeting, a summary of the feedback that they've received on their equivalent exposure draft. And the plan at this stage is that from July we should start the joint re-deliberations of our classification and measurement proposals for financial instruments.
Okay, thank you very much. That about wraps it up for this month. Just a reminder that listeners can download a written version of ISB Update from the Stay Informed tab of ifrs.org. The next board meeting will take place, we commence on the 17th of June. In the meantime, we also have an advisory council meeting on the 10th and the 11th of June. All meetings, of course, will be available to the public. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next month.